I wanted to look with you. If you remember last time, I mentioned to you what were some of the themes that will occur in Joshua as we go through it. But there is one big and main theme that really, if you were to say, what is the big idea of Joshua, it is what I want to look at today. And you could summarize it in a sentence like this. God keeps his promises, but he calls upon us to keep ours. God keeps his promises, but he calls upon us to keep ours. You see, I think today there's a great confusion about what salvation by grace means and what it looks like in the Christian life. So what I want to do today is look at this idea that though we are saved by grace, and though everything we do in the Christian life is by grace, and though heaven, when we cross the valley of the Jordan and enter into heaven, it will all be by grace. It's also true, though, it doesn't just happen. You see, grace shouldn't make us passive. The promises of God shouldn't make us fatalists. Well, if God has promised, it's just going to happen. And I want to look at this theme in detail. You see, actually, I'm getting ahead of myself because my first sermon from Joshua 1 will be looking at this theme. But I want to do it so I don't have to keep caveating myself in every single sermon I preach, because I want the sermon to have the weight the text demands it to have. Because sometimes when you caveat too much and say, it doesn't mean this, you actually lose the reason God inspired it at that particular point, which was to make an impact on that particular issue. So this is why Bible study is so important in the life of the church, because you can deal with these things so that when you come and hear Lord's Day ministry, you immediately know in your mind he's saying this and he's not saying that. It means this, it doesn't mean that. So we're developing our systematic understanding of Scripture, the key themes and principles and key doctrines taught in Scripture, that we can actually understand the Bible. And I hope also when you go home and when you read your Bible devotionally, you can get more out of it. And so then what we're dealing with in Joshua is about the conquest, isn't it? The conquest of the land. Now, in Joshua, it's absolutely clear that when they enter the land, who would be the reason they entered the land? Them? Because they fought? No, it was God. God is the reason they would enter the land. But then, did they sit on the verge of the Jordan and go, well, God has said we're going to have it, therefore we're going to sit on our loins? No, they actually had to fight the good fight. They actually had to take on their enemies. They actually had to clear the land of the Canaanites in order to enter the rest. Now, is there a contradiction there? There is no contradiction there. It's all by grace. It's all by God's strength and enabling. But they had to work it out. They had to accomplish what God had promised. But even that, from beginning to end, was all God's enabling grace. As they fight, God fights. And so what we have here is a principle in the book of Joshua which applies to the Christian life. Remember what Paul said. All things that were written beforehand were written for our learning and our instruction. So this is inspired, I believe, as a picture of the Christian life. That Israel's fight with the Canaanites in order to enter into their rest is a picture of the Christian life as a fight. The Christian life is a fight, and it's a fight until we enter our heavenly rest. There are many enemies and battles to be won in the Christian living before we get there. And we can't just sit on our, as I said, sit down and chill out and go, well, you know, it's by grace and I don't have to do anything. If you do that, you won't get there. And you say, that's a contradiction. No, it's not. Two things go hand in hand. Let's look at it from salvation point of view. This is by way of introduction. But from the point of view of salvation. Is salvation by grace? Yeah? You can nod at this point. It's a Bible study. It's interactive. But did you have to respond? So that's something you did. It's not by grace. Ah, but you had to respond, didn't you? You had, look, that's a verb, isn't it? You do, it's a verb, it's a doing word, isn't it? Look, turn, follow, believe. These are active words. You do those things, don't you? God doesn't do those things. You do them. Ah, but you do them because of God's enabling spirit. So it's his work, not by works. But you still work. you still respond. And it continues like that all the way to heaven. From the viewpoint of the sinner, so, you know, if someone gets converted, Joe's over there, Joe's converted. In one sense, it looks like to Joe that Joe's done this, doesn't it? Because he's, well, I've believed, I've responded, I've understood, I've seen, I'm following, I'm going to church. But we know that behind his doing is God's doing. Behind his working and his responding is God's initiative. And the same is true as we seek to enter our heavenly rest. You see, the land of Canaan is a picture of heaven. Okay? And so the principles that are in play for Israel as they go to take the land of Canaan apply to the principles of the Christian. He seeks to enter in to his heavenly rest. And so you have in Joshua 1, I won't keep referring to the verses, but God says to them, verse 2, I'm giving you this land. And yet another point, he says, go and claim the land. Win the land. Fight. Which one is it? Giving? But if someone provides a gift, you've still got to claim it and seize it, haven't you? And you might have to go through a few obstacles to take what God is offering you and giving to you. When we're told in the scriptures, we have a precious inheritance kept for us. But no Christian gets there without perseverance. There's not anyone who's stopped persevering who's in heaven. We have to labour. We have to work. These are the things we have to do in the Christian life. But God's promises always stand. God's promises always stand. It's amazing, isn't it? After a total faithless generation, God is still saying, look, it's still there. You can have it, but you've got to claim it. But not in your own strength and not in your own works. You're not going to get the land and go, well, look what my hands have accomplished. In fact, the whole existence of Israel is a miracle, isn't it? Their salvation is by grace. God delivered them from Egypt with a mighty hand. That's why they remembered the Passover. At the Passover, they remembered that they were delivered by God. They didn't part the Red Sea. God did. It was God's sovereign intervention. And then what were they saved? They were saved from slavery and bondage. What were they saved to? An inheritance. The land of Canaan. The land of rest. It was given to them as a gift. But they had to fight to enter it. But they could never claim any of this, even when they arrived, was of their own doing. Deuteronomy 7 says, for you are a holy people to the Lord your God, and the Lord your God has chosen you to be a people for himself, a special treasure above all the peoples on the face of the earth. The Lord did not set his love on you nor choose you because you were more in number than any other people, for you were the least of all peoples. But because the Lord loves you, and because he would keep the oath which he swore to your fathers, the Lord has brought you out with a mighty hand and redeemed you from the house of bondage. So what you've got there in that verse, despite the fact the interruptions went along the way, is that God is the one taking the initiative. It's all God, 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 God. But grace actually calls us to keep our promises. God said, I keep my promises to you. Now you keep your promises to me. You be obedient. With grace comes obligation. If your understanding of grace doesn't oblige you to obedience, you haven't understood grace. Grace does actually make us a debtor. And when you have a debt, that means you have a duty to perform. There are things to do. There are responses to make. And God, therefore, by taking hold of us and delivering us, calls us, like he called Israel, to pursue the things for which he took hold of us. He took hold of the nation of Israel so that they would be his treasured possession, so that they would be in the land, enjoy his presence, know his favour, that they would be a nation set apart, a light to the whole world, that they would be his people and he would be their God. So he says to them, take hold of that for which I have taken hold of you. And the same is true for the Christian. We've been delivered and saved and called out of darkness, called into God's marvellous light. We have all of these precious promises, and then we are to take hold of them, to fight the good fight, to claim the prize for which Christ took hold of us. As I said, God offers them the land, but it won't just happen. They had to actually fight the fight of faith. Now, to prove my point, why don't you turn to Hebrews chapter 11? The great chapter of faith. And this proves that there's a consistency here between the Old Testament and New Testament. God is the same yesterday, today, and forever. Faith, therefore, does not change. Faith is faith. It was the same faith that saved in the Old Testament that saves in the New Testament. They were looking to Christ to come. We look to the Christ who has come and is. But what I want you to see, we read Hebrews 11, is that faith isn't passive. Faith always leads to action, if it's real faith. Look at verse 7. By faith, Noah, being divinely warned of things not yet seen, moved with godly fear, prepared an ark. These are all verbs, aren't they? For the saving of his household, by which he condemned the world and became an heir of righteousness. So he believed the flood was coming. What did that make him do? He built an ark. Faith made him perform a duty, a response, an action to God. By faith, Abraham obeyed, verse 8. By faith, Sarah herself received strength to conceive, and she bore a child. By faith, verse 17, when Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. But verse 23, by faith, Moses, when he was born, was hidden 3 months by his parents. Sorry, verse 24, and when he became of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He refused, choosing, these are all verbs, rather to suffer affliction with the people of God. Verse 27, he forsook. Verse 28, he kept. Verse 29, they passed through. By faith, the walls of Jericho marched down. They actually marched. They actually did these things. Is it their work? Oh no. Faith is a gift. And faith is sustained by God and increased by God. But nevertheless, you could say at one level, they are doing these things. You could actually say at one level, Noah built the ark, can't you? No, he did. Sarah did give birth at an old age. But they did this in God's strength. And the same was true in Joshua's generation. If they didn't perform their duties and respond to God's promises and gifts and grace, they wouldn't enter the land. They would not have entered the land. Now, that's not works. That is not works. They fight, but God fights for them. Why did the walls of Jericho fall down? Because they marched around it? Yes. Because of God's power? Yes. Because if they hadn't marched around it like they were told, it wouldn't have fallen down. But it fell down because they marched around it? No, because of God's power. These things are both true. They're not inconsistent. Why did the armies of Israel put to flight the armies of the Canaanites? Answer A, because the Lord fought for them. But if they'd sat in their tents, they would not have won. Why did Gideon rout the Midianites in Judges with his 300 men? Because he routed the Gideonites, the Midianites. He put them to flight at one level, but because God performed a miracle. That's the ultimate cause. But the secondary cause is Gideon went to war. Israel were not entitled to the land. They couldn't say, oh, we deserve this. Oh, no. It was by grace that they were offered it. They couldn't overcome in their own strength, but only in God's grace. And so we need to understand, we need to have our minds renewed in to think along biblical lines, that as Christians, being people of grace doesn't mean we should be lazy. It doesn't mean we should just be sit back because it's all by grace, man, and I'm going to safely arrive in the promised land. It won't happen if you have that attitude. It won't. Let me read this from a study Bible. God initiates the charge to Joshua and he promises his presence as a guarantee of faithfulness and success. It is God who chose Joshua and exalts him. The presence of God, represented by the Ark of the Covenant, leads Israel forward and overcomes the natural barriers of the Jordan River and the human barriers of the walls of Jericho. It is God who orchestrates Canaan's fear of the Israelites through these events. It is God who topples Jericho's walls and preserves Rahab, enables the children of Israel to defeat Ai, sends down hail on the southern coalition and lengthens the day to defeat them, gives Hazor and the north into Joshua's hands, guides the lot to determine the tribal lands. I could keep going on. God did all these things, but he did all these things as they kept their promises, as they responded to God's call. If they were faithless, they would have not perished as the previous generation would have. So God says to Israel, fight, but I will fight for you. You fight and I'll fight with you, but you must fight. Now we have an inheritance, as I said, heavenly Jerusalem, the new heaven and the new earth. And Hebrews 4 tells us that the promise of entering that rest still stands. For every one of you, it still stands. But what I am saying to you, and I said this might sound like a contradiction because you believe, well, God will get me there. But what I am saying to you is this: if you don't fight the good fight, you will not go to heaven. Because both those things are true. When you cross those shores and you're in heaven, you will say, by grace, by God's enabling power and God's enabling strength. But lazy Christians don't go to heaven. This is what the scriptures teach. And I think this is a weak point in the church today. I think this is a gap in Christians' theology today. But this is why I think it's the neglect of the Old Testament that's caused part of this. These things were written for our learning. If you're questioning me, well, what about Hebrews 4 verse 11? It's a New Testament verse. Let us therefore be diligent to enter that rest. He's writing to Christians, Paul. Let us therefore be diligent to enter that rest. You've got to be diligent to enter that rest. Lest anyone fall according to the same disobedience. He's referring to the Israelite generation that fell in the wilderness because they were not willing to enter the rest. They were too scared. Joshua and Caleb brought back a report. They said, we're not going in there, there's giants. Faith, they had no faith. But if Joshua and Caleb got to go in, because faith always leads to what? Verbs. Action. To service, to following, to obeying the Lord. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell down. By faith, the harlot Rahab did not perish with those who did not believe. So if God keeps his promise, so should we. He offers me and he offers you rest today. It's an inheritance prepared for you. But you need to fight and diligently work to ensure that you take hold of that for which he took hold of you. This is in our hymns. What I'm saying, you can find hymns to claim the prize of Christ my own. Hebrews 11 is there to inspire us. It's the great Westminster Abbey of faith. And what we learn is that if we want to go to heaven, we have to work out our salvation with fear and trembling. For it is God who works in you to sit down, to will, to desire first, and to do. So let's work backwards. If there's no willing and doing, is God working in you? If God works in you both to will and to do, according to his good pleasure, if there's no willing and doing, there's no God working in. So true faith and salvation by grace always leads to a life of faith. And the life of friends, my friends, is the most active life you can imagine. And this is so important, you see, because what I'm reminded of in Joshua is the danger of just settling and not living by faith. The danger of just taking it easy. Because you see, decline in the Christian life and decline in churches, it happens very, very gradually. No one wakes up one morning and goes, I don't want to follow the Lord anymore. It happens over a very long time of intentional neglect of responsibilities and obligations before the Lord. It begins with the decision not to fight. That's where it starts. It's that day when you decide, I'm not going to read my Bible today. I can't be bothered for it. That's decline. And because you've done it that day, it'll be easier to do it the next day. And then the next day. And then the pattern sets in. Oh, I won't pray today. Oh, the day didn't go too bad. Clearly don't need prayer that much. Not to miss a worship service. To skip the prayer meeting. And what happens is, professing believers slowly fall away. And what we're warned about in Hebrews is some fall away, just like the generation who didn't go into the land did, beyond return. And so we are called here to remember, when we think of, we talk a lot about God's promises, all these promises, God, yeah, but the promises have to be sought. So I mentioned to you, seeking the face of God, seeking his presence. When God looked down on Israel, Isaiah 64 verse 7, he was astonished. Why? Because there was no one who took hold of themselves, who roused themselves to take hold of God. God's saying, I've got all these promises, all these gracious promises, but there's no one in Israel who can be bothered to even take hold of me. It's like the promise of salvation. The gospel is the power of God to salvation. Do you believe that? It's a promise. But if we sit down and don't share it, we're like the hyper-Calvinists who think, well, it's just going to happen. So is salvation then dependent on God's people? Well, at one level, you could say so, couldn't you? At one level. Unless God's people share the gospel, churches will dwindle and die. But you know, don't you, that when you share the gospel, I think this is a good illustration of what I've been saying, you know that when you share the gospel, God gives new life. And that conversion is entirely dependent upon his Spirit and upon his grace. But those things are both true. Jesus said, you go into all the earth. You are my witnesses. You are the light of the world. And yet he is the light. And yet it's him that saves. And yet it's him that is the ultimate witness. And so I think we need then, as we go through Joshua, I'm not going to keep caveating it every time. I'm just going to let each passage have the emphasis that God inspired it to have. But I want you to know that when God calls us to him, fight the fight of faith. I am not saying, and I will not be saying, that we're not. It's not of grace. Of course it's of grace. Of course it's a gift. But we have to work out what God is working in. And we have to take hold of that for which God has took hold of us. And I can tell you this, that if you live the life of faith, if you live by faith and not by sight, if you persevere, if you overcome, when you're knocked down, if you get up, if you seek his mercy, if you live for the Lord as he enables you, you will hear the words that are said to Joshua's generation. Not a word failed of any good thing which the Lord has spoken to the house of Israel. All came to pass. That will be your experience. When you reach heaven's shores, you will say, God has been good to me. He never left me nor forsook me. He was always working all things for my good and for his glory. But by faith you will get there. And that faith will lead you to action. Well, I hope that will give you something to chew on and meditate on. And as always, if you have questions or things arise or question marks, please do ask.